As we've talked about, I think many times, whenever we talk about the cruise, talk about a cruise trip report, the dining is sort of remnant of the past that I used to enjoy as a kid. Being able to sit down and have a meal with my family as a kid, we would do that. And you don't really do that nowadays very frequently on land, but you do have the opportunity to do that in a dining room. And so we did that every night. And the first night, it took 45 minutes for us to get iced tea. The second night, the same. On the second night, the only night that they had Carpaccio, the Carpaccio came and it was like 60% of the size that it would normally be. I mean, and almost embarrassingly so, they put it on the same side that they normally serve on. So that made it even more stark of a contrast. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we cover a Mediterranean cruise with a little bit more touring after the fact and a Delta One lounge experience. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, how are you, Trevor?
I'm just happy to get back at it. We took a couple of weeks off recording and excited to talk through what was, in my mind, probably one of the best trips of the year from my family and I.
Ooh, that's a pretty high praise for a trip. I'm excited to hear about some of it. I think we've intentionally not been talking about this, saving it up for this episode.
Yeah. Every so often we do that, and I'm curious how that changes the listener experience.
But it sounds like you started off with a bang, right? You started off with an experience in Delta One, as you might have alluded to in the intro here. I'm really excited to hear about that.
Yeah, and I think we kind of mentioned in a prior episode, my wife had found with Flying Blue Miles some Delta metal space out of JFK, and it was actually fairly inexpensive. I was really surprised. It was definitely the Air France saver level, and so we had that opportunity. We had to fly up to JFK on a separate award. Not a huge deal. In fact, I was actually kind of impressed with how much they made that just an easy experience, even though it was a regional jet from Reagan. And we get to the Delta One lounge, and we sort of meandered to get there because I said to my wife, I said, hey, let's check out the Sapphire Lounge. You know, we haven't been there. There's so many lounge options in JFK, and we had 6 hours.
This is like Terminal 4, right, at JFK?
Is that where Delta inversion?
I think so. Yeah, and you're right. There's a lot of lounge options in Terminal 4, including the Delta options, but there's a bunch of other carriers that fly out of there. And then, of course, you have a Centurion and a Chase Sapphire in Terminal 4, I think.
Yeah, Centurion's not really friendly to the family anymore for reasons we won't go into. But yeah, we tried to go to the Chase Sapphire Lounge at like 12:30, 1 o'clock, and I was astonished. They weren't even accepting anybody except for the Etihad passengers. So we ended up going straight to the Delta One Lounge. The folks there couldn't have been more awesome. There's a gentleman that was standing right by the door after you sort of get welcomed in, and he was sort of advocating that we store our luggage with him. And he was kind enough to do that, which actually turned out to be a really smart move. I usually keep my luggage with me, my carry-ons, just because of the way I am. And with the crowd in the lounge, as well as going from lunch, you know, a sit-down lunch in a nice dining environment, to the spa for a spa treatment. They had like 15-minute massages and other options, and just kind of meandering around the overall lounge, not having to worry about the suitcases, definitely was a smart move.
Yeah, I'm excited to make my way to Delta One of these days. Everyone speaks so highly of it, and you really don't hear very much negative about it, which is kind of interesting. You know, people love to nitpick, right? So the fact that you don't hear too many negatives, especially in our space, means it must be pretty special.
Yeah, I don't know that I could find something to sort of nitpick about. We had one sort of negative experience toward the end. So we had ducked out to go to the Capital One Lounge because it's just downstairs, and they have a really cool little kind of, I call it a Batcave type elevator. There's two ways to get into the Delta One Lounge. One is the elevator that just happens to be like maybe 50 feet from the Capital One Lounge. And then the other is to go up an external elevator and just approach like you were approaching from security. And when we got back, the only place we could sit, the only place that had any seats at all, was the quiet area. And we had a great waiter. He was taking good care of us. And he transitioned out and somebody else transitioned in. And at that point, my daughter, you know, toddlers will be toddlers. And so I had a rather rude waiter that sort of kept coming back. And candidly, I don't believe my daughter was that loud. I mean, we asked her to quiet down, but I mean, we're not talking screaming. She's just talking to me. And so that sort of soured the last bit of our experience. And we got up and we walked away, but we ended up not being able to find a place to sit other than that area. So, I mean, it sort of surprises me.
What time of the day was this? So I guess it starts getting a little crowded as you get further into the evening, I guess.
Yeah, this was before the European banks. So I have to think it was probably around 5:30. And it was packed. I mean, completely packed. The little patio, an enclosed patio outside was very nice, but that was packed. They had just a main seating area. And this is not a small lounge. This was a very sizable lounge. It looked like the restaurant was completely full, the buffet area completely full. They even had a little place, a little fruit juice bar. All the seating everywhere, completely taken. And so we just sort of said, okay, well, the plane boards in 15 minutes. We might as well just take a leisurely walk down that way. So that was probably the only challenge I had. I think I'm still surprised that they had the ability to fill that lounge. I mean, it is a big lounge. And I thought it was only Delta One flyers, like on Delta Metal. So I probably need to take a look and see how many other flights they have out of there that actually has Delta One. It just felt like this was...
JFK has a lot of flights. You know, it's a lot of Delta One flyers. So I guess, you know... And I guess most people, the word is out. So if you're flying Delta One, I guess everyone's kind of availing themselves of the lounge. So I think if you're a Sky Team, if you're on a Sky Team carrier and you're also flying in business class, I think you also have access to the Delta One lounge.
For some reason, I thought that wasn't the case because I specifically targeted this for Delta Metal.
I mean, in practicality, I think like what Air France and a couple of the other carriers don't leave from that terminal. So I think the reality is it's probably not easy for you to access it. Trevor's doing some on the fly producing. Maybe he's going to check for us to see if that's the case.
Yeah. We'll find out just for a real quick second. Delta One Lounge is available to same day departing or arriving Delta One ticketed passengers, Delta 360 members, same day departing or connecting flights operated by the following Delta partners. So not all of them, only Air France, LATAM, KLM, Korean Air, and Virgin. So I don't think anybody's going out of their way from Air France or KLM or even Korean
but to Virgin,
go from Terminal 1 to Terminal 4.
I know Clubhouse is in Terminal 4, but I think Delta 1's probably a little bit nicer now than the Virgin Clubhouse at JFK. So you probably have all those Virgin flights as well. So that's a pretty sizable number of people, I guess, between all the JFK departures and all the Virgin departures.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess when you look at it from that vantage, yeah, I could see how this thing packed out. So anyway, we ended up leaving when we couldn't find a seat. The funny part is that's probably the first time I've had that situation in a long, long time, not being able to find a seat in the lounge. But I tend to get to the lounge early, as our listeners
as one does.
As one does.
So where were you actually flying to? Like, where was this Delta One flight actually going?
So we were flying to Madrid, but we didn't really do anything in Madrid, right? So
okay.
We had I'm trying to think the aircraft type. I usually make a note of that, and I don't see it in our show notes. But we had just a kind of run-of-the-mill reverse herringbone seat Delta One experience. So far I've seen the seat map for the true Delta One, like with doors, twice. On two different Delta One flights, and I've gotten neither. So I don't know that I'm a betting man of ever actually flying the true Delta One experience.
Yeah, I think reverse herringbone, that's probably like a 330, if I had to guess. I know they have some of the 330 Neos, and obviously the 350s that have kind of the newer Delta One seats with the closing doors and everything, but Yeah, strangely, I think on European flights, you're more likely to get some of the older equipment like 767s and things like that.
I have such limited experience with Delta. I think I've flown them to Lima. I've flown them to Madrid, and I don't think I've flown them other than those two international and
wow.
then like a handful of domestics.
It's not a ton.
No, SkyTeam has been a blind spot. You know, we already talked about how my only KLM flight was that Fifth Freedom from Singapore to Denpasar, Bali. So there's definitely a blind spot for me in finding redemptions as well as just in general flying SkyTeam.
But, you know, I mean, it's definitely not one to, like, you know, overlook. I mean, you know, we've flown Air France together, and I think they do a pretty good job, and a lot of different good options on Flying Blue over the Atlantic, obviously.
Yeah, I love their, 56K business class saver awards when you can find them. The fuel surcharges and fees are a little bit higher. Usually you see that in the 100, 150 range on Star Alliance, but you do see it in the, like, 300 to 500 range on Air France.
So you made it to Madrid, and then I think you found another interesting way to get to your next destination, right?
Yeah, so we actually got really lucky because we went a day early, as we always do. And so I think we were going to take the train, and then there were some train strikes that were forecast to possibly happen. So we ended up just flying from Madrid down to Barcelona. I think that was Air Europa.
You have had been subject to more industrial action than hardly anybody else I know.
But wait till we get to Milan.
God, okay. Well, let's keep going. Sorry.
So we end up flying into Barcelona, or I guess Barcelona, and ended up staying at the Grand Hyatt. That was perfectly fine. We were kind of exhausted from the travel day, but come to find, I think a day or two later, there was, I think, a baggage strike in Madrid. Like of baggage carriers. And then I think a couple of days after that, there was a cyber attack on a bunch of the European airports. So we're off on this cruise on the Allure of the Seas, and it felt like all hell was breaking loose.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you missed them, or you were able to avoid them, because despite your best efforts, I think there've been other times where you've been subject to some of these interesting European actions that have been out there.
I mean, the odds are pretty high if you go to Europe fairly frequently that you're going to get impacted. I think that's the national pastime in some of these countries.
It does seem like it.
And they're good at it. Don't get me wrong. They're efficient. They'll definitely jam you up.
But I guess the good news is you got on to Allure of the Seas without too much trouble, which is one of my favorite Oasis class ships for Royal Caribbean. It actually just recently had a dry dock and remodeling, I think, just a little while ago.
Yeah, it was really cool. So it was almost funny because they didn't update the photos. So you know how like you have the option to do the photo in front of the cruise ship? Like, and they have the cruise ship backing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't.
It was out of date.
Yeah, because what they did was they put the that big purple slide, which I finally got down, by the way.
Nice.
And they also put, if I recall correctly, they put some, actually, I don't know if they put the backing in, like how Utopia and Wonder have. I need to look back at the photos, but I know they put in that big slide, and that slide is very noticeable.
This is the dry slide, right? This is the abyss that
yes,
goes from
abyss.
Like, I think it's like deck like what, 12 or something down to deck 8 or something even worse than like that. Maybe from deck like 14 to 5 or I don't know, something like that. So it's like 8 or 9 stories, right?
It is. I was surprised at how quickly it went.
It looks scarier than it really is.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that statement. Sort of just went down almost on a whim. Our daughter was at the kids club, and I said to my wife, I said, I want to do this. There's no line. I'll see you at the boardwalk. And she just sort of chuckled and headed to the elevator. So
basically in like a felt like knapsack or something where you put your feet in and you just basically go down this steel slide, right? That's essentially the experience.
It felt like I was putting on a potato sack. Yes. Yeah, but the Allure did a lot of different little things that I happened to notice. The kids area was much more expansive. They had a slide that had to have been a deck high, going from I suppose that's deck 15, the pool deck, to that, you know, deck higher. it wasn't connected, but I'm, you know, as you got up to that top, ready to go down the slide, you were just about up at a deck 16 level. And then there were just some other small things. The location for the country bar and restaurant, which I can never remember the name of, that we go to every time. Remember the...
The Mason Jar.
Yeah, the Mason Jar. I keep on wanting to call it the Moonshiners. But they moved the location of that. The Windjammer had a side entrance versus a center entrance, which was different as well. So this layout, to me, felt much more foreign than the prior Oasis class ships that we've sailed on. But it was really cool because it was new, and you could see some of the different design choices that they were making that I suspect we'll see on ships to come in the future.
So how was the embarkation process? Was that pretty smooth in Barcelona?
Yeah, so it was a complete mess. We took an Uber that was essentially a cab to the terminal. And it was just a scrum to try to drop off our bags. So I ended up finding a guy who seemed to know what he was doing. And I put 10 euro in his hands. And I said, can you help us with these? And not only did he get our bags into one of those bins, but then he escorted us the easier way to get in. We effectively kind of went in the way as if we were already embarked on the ship and Barcelona was just a stop. And so he got us going, which was really helpful. And after that, it was a super easy process.
Cool. Yeah, I feel like I've done the same, similar sailing now a couple of years ago, but this was back when there were a lot more like COVID related restrictions and things. And they even canceled one of the ports. Like, I don't think we ended up not going to Marseille. But I think, is that one of the ports that you guys were on this particular cruise?
It was, and let me tell you, you didn't miss anything. I mean, if you were a rosé fan, maybe you missed a bottle of, you know, having a nice bottle of wine somewhere, a Côte de Provence rosé wine. But it was not impressive to me. I was looking forward to it, and I was sort of questioning my research by the time we were walking back from the old town. But we didn't go there first. We went to Palma de Mallorca, which was a new one for all of us, and a beautiful, beautiful architecture there.
Yeah, they have that lovely cathedral that Antonio Gaudi designed. That's just right there, pretty close to the port, I think, you know, where you can usually see it. It's kind of one of those buildings that dominates the town of Mallorca, Palma de Mallorca, at least when I recall from visiting also on a cruise ship a number of years ago.
Yeah, and they had a market around it too, like an open air market, which was nice. It was just a little bit too much on the stairs to get up there to actually get inside. This time, I suspect that as our daughter gets older and she's able to do more of her walking and, you know, grows out of the stroller, that we'll go back to getting into churches more frequently. But yeah, just general, pretty nice place. We ended up walking to Mercat de Olivar, I suppose it's called, and that was a market. Normal things that you'd see on a market. They had meat, they had fish, they had wine, they had sliced meats, some souvenirs. I was expecting it to be something more like the market we saw in Valencia, but this was probably about half the size. But on the bright side, outside of it, they had a playground. So we went into the market for a little bit and then gave our daughter the chance to get some of the energy out, get some of the wiggles out. It's funny, but I try to bake in those types of stops, but they're just... Not every city has them as much as a city like Madrid. So this was one of those where we got lucky in finding one. Not all the other cities could we even find any parks that at least, you know, based on the research that I was doing, that were close to the places we wanted to be.
Yeah, I think like Palma de Mallorca, it seems to be one of these places where you can do kind of a self-guided exploration, you know, a little bit more easily maybe than some other ports. I'm guessing that's what you ended up doing, right? You didn't actually buy an excursion or anything like that. Just kind of went out to the town and started doing some your own discovery and exploring, right?
And that's what we did for almost all of our stops. We're not big tour people, and if we do tours, we usually like to have a private one. I realize that's a little bit of lifestyle inflation, but I find that it gives us a lot more flexibility, and sort of like what we talked about on the Rio episode, you know, you're buying your time back because you're going to the places you want to go and only the places you want to go. Often cases, you can sometimes get, you know, not jump the line, but like you, there might be options to jump the line by paying a little bit more. And if you're in a small group, you're not, you know, everybody's together, right? Whereas if you're in a larger group, if I decide to skip the line and pay that premium, but not everybody else does, I'm still waiting. I haven't gained anything.
Well, you know, just, you know, if you're on one of these cruise, you know, offered excursions, you know, they're typically going to be in a big bus. And there's always kind of milling around time. You're waiting for everybody to be ready and everybody to get on. And then, you know, even once you're there and you want to go to the next stop, there's always this kind of organizational time to make sure that everybody is on the bus. So yeah, you're kind of cutting a lot of that out. And like you said, you know, when you're on a private tour, there are some options for expedited entry or VIP entry into some of these places that you're visiting that will be available to you that won't be available to a larger group on a big bus.
Exactly. I will say that one point of frustration, every port except for Napoli or Naples had a bus required, and that made no sense to any of us. I mean, I suppose it makes sense because they're industrialized ports, but in Palma de Mallorca and Marseille, you had to pay for the bus. Palma de Mallorca actually dropped you off close to Old Town. Marseille literally dropped you off at the entrance to the port. You still had to exit the port, which was not terribly convenient.
And I will point out, you know, like part of that, Trevor, I think is because, you know, of course, you're on an Oasis class ship. These are the largest ships, you know, pretty much, you know, in the world. And they can't be accommodated in ports that are super close to the cities usually. So, you know, this is more common with these large mega ships. One of the advantages with cruising on some of the smaller lines that have smaller ships are they can usually actually port closer to the central city. And you may not need a bus, but that's not always the case. But that is one of the negatives of being on an Oasis class ship on Royal Caribbean versus, you know, some like maybe something like, I don't know, something small on Holland America or some Viking or some of these other cruise lines that, you know, have, you know, ships with, you know, 1,000 passengers instead of like 6,000. So.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that entirely, though, because we had the Voyager of the Seas we did up in Northern Europe and in the Explorer of the Seas in the Greek Isles. And I feel like the vast majority of those, and obviously, you know, the Voyager class are much smaller. We were still on a bus, which, you know, for better or for worse, it's, I don't know if that's just because of the ports in Europe in general.
Some of the ports are always going to be like that. I'm just thinking that there are certain ports where there may be berths that are closer, right, to town that can only accommodate the smaller ships. And of course, Allure is, you know, one of the largest. So that's going to be less likely. And, you know, and even with Voyager and Explorer, I mean, they're, you know, essentially what, a third of the passengers are like more in the 2,000 to 3,000 range versus, you know, 6,000.
Yeah, yeah. And you get so much more with the Oasis class ships, though.
Absolutely. A lot more amenities.
Yeah. So I don't think I said all the ports. So we left from Barcelona, round trip, Palma de Mallorca, Marseille, La Spezia, Civitavecchia, which I kept calling Civitavecchia for one reason or another. Just couldn't wrap my head around it, which is the port for Rome, and Naples, which we ended up going a little bit around Naples and then Sorrento. We'll talk about that in a moment. So after Palma de Mallorca was Marseille. As I said, not a ton of things to see there. We just weren't terribly impressed with just the general experience there. Although they did have a really nice port, a nice old port.
And it is one of the larger cities in France, you know, after Paris, you know. So I'm guessing there are things to see. I haven't been there, so I can't say either. But I'm sure there is something to see. It's just you probably need to exert a little bit of effort to get there. It's not as easy as just – it's probably less of a city to just kind of wander.
Yeah, this was not a city to wander. There were, in some cases, people sleeping on the streets. I feel like if you're going to Marseille and you're going to get off, you probably just want to get a tour or go to some of the wineries or something to that effect, or go up to Côte de Provence. I don't know. I just didn't feel like Marseille was the was a place that I wanted to spend an extended amount of time in. And I think a lot of people have warned me about that, but you still want to see whether things have changed in the time from when those people that are warning you about it had been there and now. So yeah, Marseille, good that we had the chance, but kind of a skip. Third stop was La Spezia. That was the pinnacle of the trip. We ended up chartering probably like a 35, 40 footer, might have been a little bit longer. And it was just the family, and they had the captain and the mate. And we got to chat maritime stuff. We got to learn history. We got to see the different architecture on both sides of the Gulf over in there in La Spezia. There happened to be some military exercises, so we saw a bunch of Italian Navy ships, as well as some of their special forces doing some drills. And we even got to swim. So it was about a four and a half hour charter. I think all in we paid somewhere between 750 euros. So it was not cheap. But they had Prosecco on board. They had a special wine that was made in Cinque Terre, or Cinque Terre. I'm trying to think.
Cinque Terre?
Cinque Terre. I apologize for not being able to pronounce that correctly.
Or I don't know, it's probably like cinque, you know, I don't know. I, my Italian's not great either.
That might have been it, but yeah. So we got to try the wine. They put out a gorgeous spread of focaccia, meats. They had fruits, and they had some cool fruit juices that we'd never tried that my daughter loved. It was just it was just the pinnacle of the trip. Because everybody in La Spezia is getting on the bus and going to either Cinque Terre or Pisa or Firenze or, you know, some other random place. Nobody stays in La Spezia.
Yeah, it's just a container port, right? It's essentially pretty boring. It's a small town, and everyone's hopping on various tour buses getting out of there, essentially.
Yeah, and they do have some shipbuilding, which was really cool. We saw one of the big yachts. We saw two different yachts. One was very military style, and I can't remember who it was that it had. And then I think there was Gucci's very deep black yacht sitting there as well. So, I mean, we saw some interesting yachts. We saw some interesting naval ships, sailboats, etc. And just had a really good time on the water for about 4.5 hours. That water was just gorgeous.
I think you said I don't think $700 or euros is exorbitant at all. I think for what I think of like a 4 hour private tour on a boat with wine and food, that sounds like a pretty reasonable price actually, for what you got. And you know, quite honestly, for the three of you, you know, if you were going to do a tour to Pisa or Cinque Terre or one of the other places that you would go from there, it was still going to be, you know, it's hard not to spend, you know, $400 or $500 anyway. Right, you know, for a family of three to do anything for that matter.
Yeah. So we had that opportunity. I would do it again. In fact, I would do that in other places too. And we did leverage Michael Rubiano to get that booked for us as an intermediary. I probably could have done it all on my own, but it was helpful that he was able to kind of do that. And I think he was able to negotiate because they wanted to do it like a 9-to-1 or a 2-to-6. And neither of those were going to work based on when the ship didn't get into the port until 9. So there was no way we were going to make it at 9, you know, to this dock, which was probably about a 10-15 minute walk away. And then, you know, then we'd be losing out on time there. And then if we did a 2-to-6, we'd miss our dinner on board. So he was able to negotiate a better timing. And we were pretty, again, it worked out really well. And because we got back, I think about 2:30, we ended up walking into town. And it really felt like we had the whole town to ourselves. We didn't get the chance to go everywhere. But I jokingly say we found this one, I'll call it a cafe, but it was also a gelateria. And they had wonderful gelato. They had Prosecco. And they had good coffee. And so my wife was happy. My daughter was happy. So happy that she ended up getting two gelatos. And I think she had a bunch of ours that we shared. And we just sat there and enjoyed the quiet and just people watching and just kind of wandering around. They had some nice shops there. They had just a nice little area that if I was going back, I think I'd do the same thing. I might give a little bit more time looking around the town, but I don't think I'm going to, getting on a tour bus in La Spezia.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that's kind of the same thing for all, a couple of the ports in Italy, including, I guess, the next one, right? The Civitavecchia, which is which they love to say is Rome, right? But it's really nowhere near Rome.
No, it's I think it's Civitavecchia. I think I typed
Civitavecchia as what I think is how I see it spelled. But again, if you're tuning into this podcast to have Tom and Trevor talk Italian, I think you're in the wrong place.
I think I got it wrong in the show notes. This was a constant battle for me. I would chat with folks and they would correct me, and I'm like, oh, I gotta really commit that to memory, but I never did. So yeah, this reminded me a lot of Marseille. Not people sleeping on the streets, but there was definitely a lot of grunginess that you had to go by. So much like the Marseille bus, they drop you off at this kind of like, it's probably more like La Spezia. It's outside of the port, but not by much. And it's literally stood up just to be for where the buses drop you off.
So I take it you didn't actually go to Rome or as some of the other people on the ship may have done.
No, this was going to be our hangout day.
I got it.
And we almost didn't get off the ship. But I had a concern because they had 1,000 people getting off in Civitavecchia, and I didn't want that, oh, there's so many people milling about kind of experience as you have, mm-hmm. like on an embarkation day. And since this cruise had two embarkation days, I just said, let's go explore. There was a little market, open air market that we found. We wandered by that. And then we found this kind of pedestrian street and got more gelato. They had some cool statues, sculptures that we looked at and enjoyed. Like there was this one with, colored pencils that we got my daughter in front of that just seemed like a cool thing, a cool photo op. And yeah, we ended up just kind of wandering around. There is a beach. We got close to the beach. We didn't go into the water there, but, there are some options in Civitavecchia. It's just, you're either taking a cab or an Uber, or you've got a good 10-15 minute walk to get to where you actually want to be in.
Yeah, when I did this same itinerary before, my parents had not been to Rome, so we did do the bus tour, and it is a long bus ride. It is a very long bus ride to Rome. It ends up being a really big full day because just the transit time, is probably close to 3 hours of the tour, let alone the time to actually see anything in Rome. So obviously, if you haven't been to Rome and you're on this type of cruise, I wouldn't necessarily put it off your list. Just understand that a significant amount of your time is going to be transiting from the boat to actually the city of Rome, and Civitavecchia is nowhere really that close to Rome. It's still a good hour by bus, and probably even not that much less by train to get into the city. So for this type of cruise, you may want to make this port day a day on the ship, because when you're on something like an Allure of the Seas, an Oasis class ship, there's a lot of amenities, a lot of things that you just won't have time to do unless you take one of these port days and spend the time. And sometimes it's a real treat because, it's the ship is considerably less crowded. There's less people on board. There are things like the pool and other, amenities are actually worth going to because you're not fighting with the rest of the ship to find a deck chair or something like that.
And we did that on the Marseille day as well. Since we had gotten back so early, we went to the pool. We had some downtime, which was nice. Yeah. Overall, I think it definitely should be a ship day unless you really want that full day.
Unless you haven't been to Rome and that you really want to make use of that opportunity. But I would say the next stop, Naples, is probably not one that you probably should make a ship day. I think that they actually do port usually pretty close to the city. And, Naples, I find is actually I've been there a couple of times now, and I really like it. I consider Naples a very interesting city in Italy.
think we got to see enough of Naples to be able to make a judgment, other than the part near the port was very seedy. Not like,
well, I think Naples in general is a little seedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's the south of Italy, you know, it tends to be a little bit poorer than the northern part of Italy. So.
Yeah. So everybody was saying you go to Naples to get out of Naples. And so we did just that. We went and we took a ferry under 100 euros to Sorrento. And that was such a cool experience until it wasn't. I say that with a little bit of humor, right? Because just as you mentioned, you know, everybody gets off these ships and they hop in a big bus. Well, a lot of people clearly did that to go to Sorrento. Because we took the ferry, we got there before they all got there. And so we got to see Sorrento with, I'll say, some tourists, but not a ton of tourists. And you could definitely see, after lunch, as we're touring, you see the buses in the distance kind of coming in. And then suddenly, these little alleyways that you're walking that you could walk comfortably, now you're like knocking into people, people are bumping into you, and it just became a situation of way too many people. But we still, before the buses got in, we had the time. We took the there's this elevator from the port area that goes up. You can do the hike too. I think it was 2.2 euro to take the elevator round trip. Hard to pass in my mind. It just seemed like it made total sense. We tried some limoncello. We picked up some souvenirs, and we had what I would say was a nice light cafe type lunch. And again, we got to see this. I would totally go back to Sorrento, but I would do it in an off season time. It's got beautiful architecture. It's just a cool little town.
Well, and I'll make a plug for other parts of Naples too, because you obviously spend your time in Sorrento, but you know, obviously Pompeii is one of the places you could visit with a stop like this. Herculaneum, there is a pretty good archaeological museum where a lot of the findings from Pompeii, Herculaneum are kind of in Naples, so that's something to go to. You know, of course, Naples Neapolitan pizza. You know, I mean, that's something to obviously go for if you happen to be in that area. So it definitely is a lot more seedy than Rome or Milan. But, you know, probably Naples is something to, you know, have on your list if you're interested. You know, also in looking to, of course, Sorrento. I haven't been there, but sounds like that was an excellent excursion as well.
Yeah. And then you also have Positano and Capri. So, I mean,
right. Lots of options.
Yeah, you're not want for options. You just have to make a tough call, because you probably only do one with the amount of time that you've got in port. I think we left port at like 6 or 7, and then we had a port day the next day, or not a port day, a sea day. So that's the ports. Where else do you want to jump to?
Well, I'd love to hear about the ship experience. I think, of course, One of the advantages of being on this kind of ship is they have a lot of world-class entertainment. I know, having been with you on a couple of other Oasis ships, I know you and your family enjoy a couple of different shows and things that they typically have on these class of ships.
Yeah, so you're going to feel like this is familiar for part of this. The ice show was a new one to us. It wasn't very technical, but the skaters were awesome, and because you spoiled us on Utopia, we decided that we were going to go in a little early and get the front row seats. Little did we know that Europeans either didn't care about the shows or weren't going to go to the early shows, and so we had no problem having some of the best seats in the house. And so the skaters often came, would high five my daughter. It turned into a really interactive show, which I thought was really cool. But I would say it was not nearly as technical as some of the other ice shows that we've seen. But it definitely got a lot of good laughs. And they had fun with the music. It was one of those where they kind of went through different music genres and sort of, you know, aligned that to the skating. The Aqua Show was, I think, the same show that we had on Utopia. I felt like the Utopia was far better. They had more diving on Utopia than we had on Allure. And I just felt like the dancing was just in general better, and the diving in general. They didn't have a tightrope. I can't remember. Did Utopia do the tightrope? Or was
that's
just,
a good point. Yeah,
Wonder?
That's. I think a couple of the ships have. You mean when like the high? What is it? The tightrope where it's like a couple stories above the theater, right?
Yeah,
is that what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I really enjoy it. I'm just observing the absence of it. So they didn't do that, and they only did like one or two from the highest jump, and only one or two from the mid jump. So it was like I said, it just didn't feel as much as what we saw on Utopia or Wonder. But being the same show as Utopia, I think that's a good comparison. I will say that we sat up front because we waitlisted for the earlier. We stood in line, and they put little towels down, which was nice.
That's good.
Unfortunately, most people had taken them that were sitting in the seats. They put seats on the benches, by the way. You know how we didn't have actual seats with backs?
Right.
They actually have these colorful, they're essentially like little deck chairs, but without the seat, but they're anchored onto the bench. So each person actually has a seat rather than just cramming in as many people on the bench as you can for, I'd say, about 80% of the theater.
Now, did you also go to the, I know this particular ship also has a Broadway musical on, I believe it's Mamma Mia. Were you able to watch that as well, or did you guys skip that?
We tried, but the volume was just way, way too loud. Even with headphones, it was just too loud for her. Candidly, it was probably too loud for me, too.
And it's like 2.5, almost 3 hours, right? That's a long musical.
Yeah.
It's the full musical. It's not reduced in time at all. It's the full Mamma Mia, which I for those of you who like ABBA and like that kind of thing, I definitely would recommend it. But I could also see some people skipping it as well. But maybe later. When she's older.
Yeah, and they only did it two or three times. I think they did it on the C day, and I think they only did it on the C day. I think they did like an afternoon before dinner, and then an evening. And I think that's all they did for Mamma Mia. And I like the movie. I haven't seen the show on Broadway or anything, but I was there for it. I was ready to try to endure it if our daughter wanted to. Instead, we ended up bailing on that. And just, I can't even remember what we ended up doing. But let's see. Schooner, you know how Schooner always has the piano man or piano person? This was no different. They had a couple of good options.
That is a like a Royal Caribbean standard, right? So the Schooner bar is usually the piano bar. On a Royal Caribbean ship, so
yes, yeah, and they had I think they had two different piano players, which was good.
Yep. So I'm sure there was some Sweet Caroline or some Billy Joel or some Elton John. I think those are you're gonna probably hear the standards if you go to the Schooner Bar one of those evenings.
And one of the piano players did in fact have her harmonica.
Okay, harmonica and piano, huh?
Yeah, for the piano man part where they play it.
That I don't know if you see that on every Schooner bar, but no, it's good. It's good that you enjoyed that. You know, one of the things that you kind of alluded to, which I'm kind of curious about, is kind of the demographic of the passengers on the ship. It sounded like there were, based on what you said, there were a lot of Europeans, right?
Yeah, I thought there were a good number of Europeans. Chatted with a couple of Irish folks. From Belfast, chatted with a handful of Brits. I definitely heard a lot of Spanish and Italian. I don't know that I remember a statistically meaningful number of Germans or that sort of thing. But it definitely felt like this was much more European rather than American. And you could sort of see it in the fact that the early dining, they do three dinings. The early dining, if it was 50% full one night, that would have been a lot. The later two dinings obviously were much more popular. And so it was a different experience, and I kind of liked it more because it felt a little bit more
spread out, right? It's like you have, and the Europeans do love their late dining, right? So, but yeah, no, I think it's interesting because, I think based on my experience cruising in Europe, that does seem to be interesting that these Royal Caribbean ships sometimes are not dominated as much by Americans, but you might not see that on every cruise line. I was hearing some experiences on like Carnival, for instance, where, even though it was leaving from Europe or from England or something like that, you still had, the vast majority of passengers being American. Where I think with Royal Caribbean, at least my experience has been, you're likely to see what, like maybe 30-40% of the ship be locals, right? Italians and Spanish speakers and other people from the continent.
Yeah, I would agree with that based on our experiences so far with Royal. When we did Carnival out of Dover, I will say that it felt like it was almost like a 50-50 American and British UK split on the Carnival Pride way back then. So, you know, I think the Brits do seem to like Carnival, or it could just be that it was going out of their, you know, it was a drive instead of having to fly. But I do see a lot more Americans on Carnival versus European cruises on like Royal and others. The one area that I didn't love was the dining. As we've talked about, I think many, many times whenever we talk about the cruise, talk about a cruise trip report, the dining is sort of remnant of the past that I used to enjoy as a kid, being able to sit down and have a meal with my family. As a kid, we would do that. And you don't really do that nowadays very frequently on land, but you do have the opportunity to do that in a dining room. So we did that every night. And the first night, it took 45 minutes for us to get iced tea. The second night, the same. On the second night, the Carpaccio came and it was like 60% of the size that it would normally be. I mean, and almost embarrassingly so, they put it on the same size plate that they normally serve on, so that made it even more stark of a contrast.
Yeah, that seems to be. I mean, it does seem like that seems to be a bit of an exception and not the rule. I mean, like I generally find, you know, having been, you know, sailed on, I forget how many, but you know, close to like 30 times on Royal Caribbean. You know, service is usually very good. I would hope that was the exception and not the rule in your experience as well.
Well, on the second day, I actually complained.
Which is the right thing to do, I think.
Yeah, but I didn't want to make it about the server because I felt like the server and the assistant were not dialed in. So I just made it about the Carpaccio. I said to the waiter, and he cut me off and he's like, I'm going to go get my boss. And I explained to the boss, I said the Carpaccio, and then I said, I'm kind of a Lean Six Sigma guy. You guys have some really inefficient processes. I waited 45 minutes back-to-back days for iced tea. I'm like, you're making your people walk all the way to the other side of the dining room to get the iced tea. You could just have pitchers here, and your people are better off, and as diner, I'm getting my beverage sooner. And so he, you know, he heard all that, and he was kind. I think the waiter and the assistant sort of dialed it in a little bit more, but I would still say that they were probably the worst that we've had on any cruise. It was so bad that the waiter and the assistant waiter from an adjoining table actually sort of served us to an extent. The waiter just nonchalantly, he didn't make a big deal about it or anything. He just nonchalantly puts a thing of Parmesan cheese, because my daughter loves Parmesan cheese, on her pasta. And they didn't bring any when she would have her pasta. And so he noticed this, and so he just sort of slides it on the corner of the table. And then at dessert, he just, you know, cookies just appear next to her. And then the assistant waiter had made origami for her. And so we actually felt like we had four servers. And between the four, we had a little bit better of an experience, but it was still not anything like what we had, I think, on Utopia and in most of our cruises. In fact, usually you get to the table after the first day or even the second day. And if you had iced tea the 2 days, it's there for you. If you had a particular ask, your mother liked her hot tea, that hot tea was there at the table for her, you know, by the time you got to the table.
That's the normal service standard that I think you and I have become accustomed to, and generally I, you know, that is what you expect. You know, usually the assistant waiter and the waiters are much more dialed in, as you say, and proactive. You know, and they're kind of monitoring because they understand that that's part of the experience. I think that's part of this bygone era, you know, of dining on cruising, where, you know, you get to know the waiter, they get to know your preferences. I think we talked about this number of times, so sorry if we're boring you listeners, but, you know, just to kind of emphasize, you know, that is one of the things that you are getting when you go on a cruise, which I like, you know, I enjoy it. I think you do as well.
Yeah. And I was looking forward to that because our daughter's gotten to the point where she's been doing it since she was like 7 months old. And so we really were looking forward to that, but we were also cognizant that we couldn't have an hour and a half, 2 hour meal. Mm-hmm. And so by going down that path where here we are, we're getting poor service and the meal is taking forever because they just don't care. The first day the food came out cold, not like cold, cold, but it was certainly not piping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will say that the quality of the food was very good. Even though the portion sizes weren't amazing, you could tell that it was good food. It felt like it was sourced in Europe, and you cut into a piece of meat and you can tell whether it's been properly trimmed, if it was a good piece of meat or not. So we had that. The third night, the waiter, I guess it's the head waiter or the waiter captain, I can't remember the title, but he comes over and says says good evening, etc. And then the waiter, as he's taking our order, he says, "Mr. and I'm not going to use the name, but has authorized the steak and lobster or the surf and turf. Should you wish to have it, we will cover that."
So that was some service recovery, I guess, from your previous encounter, right?
It was, yes, exactly. And I appreciated that. I thanked them, personally. And we did end up ordering that, which was good because they had jumbo shrimp instead of lobster for the formal night.
Interesting. I wonder if that's a new thing. Like, because I feel like maybe there's been some cutback on lobster in the main dining room, at least not the one that's available for free, complimentary, and not for the upcharge, obviously.
Yeah, and having gotten that upcharge comped, I don't think I'd do it. I don't think I saw the value of it. I enjoyed it, and as a service recovery, it was a great option.
Yep.
And that didn't stop, believe it or not. I think he saw that the service was still not to the standard that they pride themselves on.
Right.
And so when we were in Naples, departing Naples, they offered to give us a tour of the kitchen, but it was at 9 or 10 a.m. in the morning, and we had already committed to go to the pool and do the kids' pool and stuff. I don't know that I would have been terribly excited to tour the kitchen either, but I mean, that was another nice thing that they did offer.
That's usually an upcharge. Like that's not something that's offered complimentary. Usually that's part of the, I think like the sip tour and brunch event, which is usually, I forget, like $30 or something, I think on usually toward the end of the cruise.
Yeah. And again, they had offered to comp that for us too.
Yeah. I mean, I guess kudos to the head waiter. Cause I mean, I think he was being observant obviously and realized that you were not getting the level of service that was up to the standard that he knows that Royal Caribbean typically does.
Exactly. And the last night they comped a bottle of champagne, but it was not the most amazing champagne. And the execution was less than stellar from our server, even though he was the one advocating for a comped bottle. But it was sort of the thing that you get in your room, in your cabin, if you booked it in a particular way or something to that effect.
I usually get I think it's Chateau San Michel from Washington. That the sparkling wine that they have, that's at least what I got last time.
No, this was a cheap French wine, if I recall correctly. But I mean, they're all different ones, but I would say it probably tastes a lot like this Chateau Saint Michel. So that's sort of the experience that we ended up having.
Maybe you had just had some green waiters, and then obviously the other waiters in your area were probably they're been there a while, know what the standards are, and could see that there were some things that were missing, so they were trying to obviously chip in.
Well, the funny thing is our waiter and the other waiter were assistant waiters together, and they got promoted at the same time. One guy clearly knew the job. The other guy didn't even know the assistant waiter job.
Yikes.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely one of those things. He ended up telling us that he was getting off the ship after when we were getting off. He had negotiated a change to his contract because he didn't want the extension anymore and wanted to go back to Manila. So, I mean, I think he might have just been done. And, I get that. I get that you're still checked out. Yeah, he clearly was checked out. It's unfortunate. But yeah, overall, I would do that again. I felt like I came off the Allure a lot happier than I came off the Explorer, just because you had all the room, you had just all the amenities and everything. And so I just wish they'd do more innovative ports with the big ship that they send. But that's sort of how it is, right? There's only so many ports you can go.
And, and the way things are going with, locals in Europe, complaining about over-tourism, I just think, unfortunately, when you're on a big Oasis class ship like that, I think that is one of the limiting factors. I think if you want some of the more innovative ports. I think that's why you're going to see the smaller ships go to some of those destinations that you're just not going to see as often. But, you know, it's part of the balance. You know, if you want a ship with all the amenities, you know, and you know, I'm going to speak for you and say, you know, that's part of the vacation, right? It's the ship is one of the features, right? It having all those amenities and entertainment options and everything. You could go with a smaller ship, but then obviously you're missing out on, you know, aqua shows and ice skating and, you know, all the different other things that they can provide on a ship that large.
I couldn't have said it better. And the other thing, this went to ports that I was interested in, that I have contemplated going to, and it helped me to realize, hey, maybe that's not the right port for me to actually go and spend a week or a weekend. So not going to Marseille, mm-hmm. That's an easy one, right? But I don't think I'd go back to Palma de Mallorca. I mean, not for like an extended stay. It was interesting, but it didn't jump out at me in a way like a Madrid or a Rome or like Sorrento did. I would certainly see myself going back down to Naples and exploring that whole area, Positano, Capri, Pompeii, and perhaps even staying in Sorrento. There's a wonderful Hilton there that I think Robert talked about on an episode many, many years ago. And I think we've got other friends that have been there more recently that have loved it. So, you know, it hits both ways. But by being able to kind of get a taste for some of these different ports, it definitely allows you to sort of either highlight cities or locations on your list or strike them out.
I really like your comment because, you know, one of the things I think people don't do is, you know, they don't know until they go, right? So it's if our listeners are interested in doing this kind of Mediterranean itinerary, it's good to know and have a little perspective on what you're going to get with some of these ports, right? And, you know, sometimes, you know, obviously the cruise lines are going to obviously, oh, it's Civitavecchia, that's Rome, you know, it's La Spezia, that's for Pisa and Florence. And, you know, they're going to obviously talk up these ports, but, you know, it's better that you hear the ground truth, which is, you know, oftentimes these ports themselves all have differences. They have some things that are good, there's some things that are bad, and it's good to have a proper, you know, regulation of your expectations, right, with these ports, because, you know, when you get there, you're not going to be like, you know, you're not going to see the Colosseum from Civitavecchia. You're not going to see, you know, the Leaning Tower from La Spezia. You know, these are places that, you know, they're going to have in the travel brochure, but you're going to have to take a bus and take an hour to get there, or you're going to have to, you know, curate your own kind of excursion as Trevor did, you know, out of La Spezia and get your own kind of, you know, tour together. And that's often the best strategy. And it's good to do a little bit of planning and understand what you're getting yourself into, because if you are thinking you're going to have, you know, a cruise and see everything in Rome and everything in Florence and everything in, you know, Naples, it's better to regulate your expectations. Say, no, it's going to be a slice of that. It's not going to be, and you're going to have significant friction getting on and off the boat and getting onto buses and getting onto tours. And it's good to be able to kind of set those expectations, because part of doing the cruise, you know, is also about the boat and, you know, having that. The ports are good, but they're not going to always be excellent, right? You're not always going to have a very frictionless experience in some cases.
Yeah, and if you were to try to do Firenze and Pisa out of La Spezia and Rome out of Civitavecchia, you run into the other problem of you're going to miss out on some things on the ship, like the dining. You're probably not going to make it back unless you've got a late dining. And if you're doing a late dining after a full day of trying to tour, you're going to find that you just get exhausted. And you don't want to come off a vacation exhausted. I mean, maybe some people do like to come off a vacation exhausted, but for the way I travel, and I think for the way you travel, we actually travel to relax. You know, we like to tour, but we don't have to be going at 100 miles or a million miles an hour the whole time. We try to identify a couple few things that we want to see. We see them, and then, you know, you sort of relax.
Yeah, I think in my mind, you know, ports like Civitavecchia, ports like when I see Orlando on an itinerary for a cruise, or Nassau, you know, these are all ports where, okay, in my mind, that's just a sea day, because I'm just going to spend time on the boat.
A better than sea day, because others can get off the boat, whereas that's sea day, you're just fighting for seats.
Yep.
Yeah, so the C day, like I said, we just hung out. I think I did a little bit of gambling, just to gamble the little bit of the points that I had gotten. I was really super efficient on this particular cruise. The way I was sort of loading money and I just happened to get lucky. I won't go too much into it. We shared a little bit of that at the meetup, but I don't think we need to go into that here. And then back to Barcelona. Nice early morning departure, and we ended up getting to fly a Fifth Freedom flight on Singapore.
How was that?
I was pretty happy with it. We were in economy, but it was like a 2-hour flight. Really good, nice IFE. I usually criticize Singapore on the IFE, but on a 2-hour flight, all I needed to find was one movie.
Was it a 777, A350? What was the equipment?
I think it's an A3. It was an A350-900.
Okay.
And so they got us into Barcelona. The only downside was that because that flight continues onward to Singapore, we effectively had to leave the European Union and return to the European Union in Milan. Leave it in Barcelona and then return in Milan. So we had a little bit of friction there with immigration. Not a big problem, just actually had to go through immigration even though we didn't really...
Even though it was a Schengen trip, the downside of this Fifth Freedom flight was it probably had... The gate was probably a non-Schengen gate, is what I'm understanding, right?
Yeah, and we had the same problem when we took Gulf Air last year from Nice. So it wasn't like it was a surprise to us. It was just another one of those things that we had to worry about. Now, we did rent a car.
Ooh, I always get nervous about renting cars in other countries.
Well, this one's a little bit worse, right? Because I had gotten a ticket last year, and the only way to pay it was to do a bank transfer. And it just seemed so scammy to me that I was like, okay, I'm just not gonna pay it. And I tried to email them, and I just got another letter from them too, which was really funny. Like, I want to say yesterday or the last few days. And I emailed them again, and I'm like, look, guys,
are there gonna be some cabbionaire finding you the next time I fly with you to Italy or something? Is that what I'm gonna basically have?
I'm told that they don't really care. Okay. By somebody in the community. I won't name names. But if any of our listeners have experience one way or the other, I would certainly be open to that. But yes, I was nervous renting a car this time because of that outstanding ticket. So end up going in, and it was bad because there was going to be action in Italy. I think it was like something like 30 or 32 different unique events across the country the following day. And so I go in. I get a little thing, and they find and there's people that had been waiting there for a half hour because I don't know whether it's because of my executive aisle status or because I was booking with National rather than I think Nexcar or whatever the other ones that one office was doing, but they pulled me up and there were other people that were like, I've been waiting. They're like, well, you should book with National next time. And so they gave us a nice car. We were actually in and out. We were probably in a car in less than a half hour from the moment we stepped off the plane, which, I mean, I think is not an unreasonable expectation in the U.S. I would never have guessed I would have been able to do that quickly.
That seems to be an exceptionally short amount of time for Europe.
Yeah, it was a lot faster than the last time I had to do that, too. So we were on the road, we went down to Acqua Terme, and we'd arranged with Ariella at Verdmont, where we had done that pizza experience that we talked about, and I'll have to dig up the show notes, but it was the Nice trip last year. And they actually have an apartment there, they have a pool, they set up a lunch, a wine tasting, and dinner for us, and then breakfast the following day, and then we just drove back to Milan. This is when we found out how bad those actions are. To the point where the Milano Express to Milano Centrale was completely canceled, and we had to figure out an alternative. Uber was trying to charge 175 plus euro for the drive, and luckily we happened to remember that in some places you do have a flat fee to get down into the city, into a central business district type thing. From Rome, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce FCO's true name. But from Rome's airport, it's a flat fee. From Milan, Malpensa, it's a flat fee for a taxi. It might not always be the cheapest. In fact, on the way back to the airport, we ended up just paying an Uber, and we saved about, I don't know, 30 or 50 euro. So it's all about knowing where you're going to be able to figure out what's the right answer. And so when we realized that the train wasn't going, we see this group of probably, I don't know, 30 to 50 people all looking at their phones, waiting on an Uber to accept them. And I see all these taxis that are just standing there. And so I walk over to one of them and I said to him, hey, can you get me to the Hyatt Centric? He's like, yes. How much? He's like, flat fee, I think it was 125 or 135 euro. And I'm like, okay, sold. So get everybody in. Off we go. Took an hour, hour and a half, a little bit more longer than it needed to be just because there was rain and everything. And we get to the hotel, and hotel was good. They upgraded the room, welcomed us back since we'd been there last year. And by this time, it's about 3 o'clock. As you know, everything closes down around 3 o'clock in Italy. And I don't know, do they do siestas there, or do they just close down
restaurants? I don't know. I'm not that familiar with the culture, especially in Milan.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, Milan being Milan, they probably don't take naps. If Madrid, they'd be taking siestas. Anyway, we ended up going to a cafe instead. And as we were going to that cafe, we encountered a protest. Now, it was peaceful at the time. We avoided it, and we just made sure we selected a cafe that was a few blocks away. But
I'm telling you, Trevor, it's you know, when you have more than one data point, it's a pattern. You know, industrial action, protests. You know, I see some things, you know, are associated with your travels, you know, a little bit more frequently than I think is statistically expected.
I think it's the frequency of travel. It's got to be bad luck, though.
Okay, Mr. I'm not. Actually, yeah, you're just Mr. Unlucky Europe, I guess.
I'm not searching this stuff out. Let me be very clear about that.
And for those of you who know what I'm talking about, you know, of course, you know, was it Valencia, or I'm sorry, it was Valencia, right?
Yeah, there was some 24-hour protest in Valencia while we were there. We never saw the protesters. We saw them as they were starting to gather, and then we just stayed away and just kind of saw where the helicopter that was following them was and walked the other way. But we didn't really encounter
much. And this guy wants me
to
do a guy's trip to Europe. I'm thinking, yeah, I'm just going to – do I have enough insurance?
Yeah, I always come home safe.
Well, it's not always worse for wear, but, you know, anyway.
Touche. But that wasn't because of the Valencia worse for wear was not because of the protests. That was just because of
it was slightly impacted.
There you go. I think just for our listeners that might not remember that episode, I ended up injuring my toe, not breaking the toe itself, but it was a summer long injury. So, but that happened well before the protests. So here we are in this cafe. Ordered some wonderful focaccia, some meat, and a bottle of Prosecco, and we're just relaxing and enjoying. Then, probably about halfway through the bottle of Prosecco, we start seeing cops, police, and carabinieri speeding down the road that we're on. They've got the sirens going. A few minutes after that, we see the breaking up, or at least we see some of the protesters coming down the road. Some even sat down at the cafe we were at. It sounded to me like the police had come in and said, okay, time to go home. And so I'm not thinking anything's of concern yet. Another few minutes, and I'm starting to see a blue hue to smoke down the street. This is still a block and a half or so away, give or take, in the distance, I'll say. Now it's getting a little closer. The manager of the cafe that we were at, and this is something I didn't notice before, but I should have, they had the tables and the chairs stacked that they normally have out so people can sit and eat. I didn't necessarily link that to a known concern, but when they came out with these big heavy chains and chained all that stuff down, it became abundantly clear they thought this was a risk. They get closer, and now I see, I'll say people in their 20s, a couple of guys lift up the wrought iron garbage cans on the side of the street and flip them over. Others are jumping on the barriers to get a better sight of this gaggle of people that are getting pushed by the police up the street and away from the train station. The smoke's getting closer. There's a point where they get a little, where the protesters push them back, but then the police ended up pushing them really fast to the point where we no longer had an escape route. And so we ended up entering the restaurant and just hunkering down in the restaurant. It was not a feeling I was looking for. It was not a feeling I was looking for. As they got by us, you could hear the pop, 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 and it felt like it was right outside the door. And you could smell the tear gas, just the faintness of the tear gas, like kind of seeping in as they were popping more and more of those tear gases. Ended up probably waiting in there probably another 20, 30 minutes. And as everybody clearly made it past, we settled our bill and we got the heck out of there. And ironically enough, we never saw anything more of it. Don't know whether they were pushed, you know, to another place, whether they just dispersed. I did end up going down to the train station the next day because apparently it got violent and they ended up breaking a bunch of windows and pulling gates down at the train station. And that's why the police were called in. And so you could see the damage. It didn't look terribly, it didn't look like a lot, but I have to believe, like, you know, the train stations, they're not built to be, you know, tender. They're built to survive hundreds and hundreds of years.
Well, and, you know, Milano Central, I mean, that is a massive station. I mean, you know, I don't know if I forget about the history of that station, but I mean, the architecture of that place, it is just a massive edifice, right? And I feel like that's part of some of the fascist kind of architecture of the period. I'm trying to remember the specifics, but, you know, back when you had the dictator, why am I blanking on his name?
Mussolini?
Mussolini, that's right. You know, part of that architecture of that period was creating these gigantic government buildings that were huge edifices that really make you feel small, right? And you know, I think, you know, the Termini station in Rome and the Centrale station in Milan, those are both these gigantic places that are not human scale. You know, they're really huge buildings that are kind of monumental, you know, in their scale and the way they're built. So yeah, you're right. They're not meant to be super fragile.
Yeah. Overall, though, our time in Milan was wonderful. We had the chance to go to the castle this time. We had the chance to revisit some playgrounds. There's an open air market that's over near this big park. And they just general kind of, you know, touring at our own speed. We this time we were actually able to avoid all the touristy stuff in the Old Town area over by the Duomo. We avoided all of that. We just wanted to sort of have a relaxing end to our vacation. We were only there for, I think, one full day, and then we had the two partial days. And it was off to fly Emirates home.
Yep, another Fifth Freedom flight, huh?
Yeah, this was like a Fifth Freedom trip, it felt like. Although, actually, probably just Singapore and Emirates. We did validate, unfortunately. So we had booked this before August 18th, and I had pre-positioned points to be able to transfer for all three of us to upgrade the first. We had booked business. August 18th, they came out and said, no kids under 8 can be in the first class cabin on points or a points upgrade. You want to pay cash? You can do it. What I really should have done was I should have tried to book her on via Qantas, but I wasn't thinking as clearly as I probably should have been. And I didn't want to like risk marooning points in Qantas, in Qantas's program as well as Emirates's program, which is because at this point I have orphaned points in Emirates.
And just to clarify, you had bought award tickets in business, and were planning to do the upgrades to first. And of course, this you know, change in policy came up rather rudely, you know, right before you were about to fly, and then you did something that's going to be very divisive, right?
Oh gosh, I was gonna glean right over that one.
Were you? I wasn't gonna let you.
Yes, keeping me responsible for my actions. So they said that we could upgrade one of us, but then the other had to stay back in business with our daughter. And my wife let me. Whether or not I ever do that again, we will see. But it worked out all right.
At least it wasn't, you know, like 13 hours to Dubai or something. You know, it was just across the Atlantic.
Just a short 8-hour flight. They were pretty happy. She got a lot of cool stuff. I got a set of Emirates PJs, which I I enjoy. They actually give you PJs in business, by the way. I think my wife likes those more than the ones in first.
I don't know I'm if guessing. I remembered giving. I guess that is that a new standard that they started offering PJs in business?
It has to be because we didn't get it on the Round the World Guys trip.
Yeah.
And they're like completely different. It's not like Qantas where, you know, they're both kind of t-shirts and one just is a different color. This is a completely different design entirely. It's a lighter design. It's a different color. Whereas the Emirates one is a little heavier. And I don't know. Probably nerding out too much there. But most of the things that you expect of Emirates was, you know, Emirates First in business is alive and well. I was actually pretty impressed because, you know, Etihad definitely had a fall from grace, but Emirates still absolutely wonderful. This aircraft was old. It did not have the higher partitions that some of them have. It did not have the new bar. So, I mean, it was nothing special, but it was nice to be able to fly first again. And I think I've scratched the itch for at least for the next 4 years until they change the rules again. The one thing that I will say, the agent was more than happy to try, and the computer stopped her. That was surprising to me.
Computer says no.
Yeah. I usually IT is hard. Just a couple of notes on the actual flight. Serving Dom 2015. So I not Plenitude, not Rosé. I know I've seen rumors and pictures of folks being served, both of those, but this was just the generic Dom Perignon vintage. And then the Caviar, which is, I think they got a lot of notes for Unlimited at some point in the last few years. It truly is, and I probably had more than I probably should have, but it was quite good. I didn't note what type of Caviar it was, though.
Cool. Sounds like your typical and good first class experience. I'm a little jealous. Have to try it again sometime soon. It's been a couple of years since I've done Emirates First, but I don't think it's going anywhere, fortunately.
No, but they changed. So the reason that we pre-positioned the points was they changed the transfer rate, I think, from Capital. I think it's either City or Capital One. They changed the transfer rate for how many miles you get, like from the points. And that's why we pre-positioned it. And then I think at some point in the last 2 or 3 months, they also increased the fuel surcharges and taxes. So it used to be that the Fifth Freedom flights were like the unicorns that didn't have the egregious $1,000 plus taxes and fees. And I think that has changed. I'll validate that.
Well, Trevor, it sounds like a wonderful trip, wonderful cruise, wonderful flight back. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm a little jealous, but I think we'll probably be planning our own adventure, I think, in the near future. I'm excited also to get back on a cruise soon as well. So I think, but it was as usual, very fun hearing about your trip.
Yeah, this was a cool one. Definitely happy to be able to share it too. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Mileonomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.